Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and also into Boston, Massachusetts. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that's our guarantee. Also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk, not a penny out of your pocket, to enter the market effectively with cash. In today's very competitive residential real estate market, you want to compete with offers that come in and have cash on them. Through the pre-purchase commitment, your offer is exactly the same. So work with one of our mortgage consultants at 633-3700 to get personalized, customized, knock your socks off service, because there's lots of loan products out there and you want to make sure that you've got the very best, and that is our guarantee. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and soon to be Boston, Massachusetts. 716-631-4800. That's the local number. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to the dedicated website on that property, all automatically, just that fast. Anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers, you'll drive by a real estate sign that's got a picture and 14 phone numbers and text numbers, and it's a lot of confusion. Ignore it. Just dial 631-4800. Doesn't matter whose listing it is. We'll get you all the information you need immediately, faster than going to your phone and even Googling that property, much faster. We're in a very active real estate market today. Your home may be worth more than you think. So if you've even had any thoughts about whether or not the home that you're living in now is appropriate, maybe they want to talk to a Hunt Real Estate ERA professional. Call today, 633-9400, and just maybe check out what your home may be worth in today's market. You can also go to our website, huntrealestate.com. We've got three algorithms there that you can select from and or use all three. Get three valuations for your property. That is a computerized version, and I encourage you to talk to a professional to have that information interpreted. But a lot of people go to something like Zillow, and that becomes their gospel truth. And in many cases, it's accurate, but a lot of cases, it's not. You'll want to make sure that information is interpreted properly. Hunt Real Estate is the official relocation and real estate provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, Rochester Americans, and we also work with our Buffalo Bisons. So we have a very special show for you today in the studio. With me today is one of our community leaders who's doing lots of things in our community. We're going to talk about a bunch of those things. That, of course, is Robert Gioia. Mr. Gioia is the chairman of the Erie Canal Harbor Development Corporation and also the president of the John R. O'Shea Foundation. Good morning, Robert.
Morning, Peter.
It's good to have you back.
Great to be here.
It's been a long time. I was looking at our records here. It's been years, and that's too long because you've done a lot of stuff in the meantime. But first of all, go back and tell us a little bit about the O'Shea Foundation. What exactly is that? How did it start, and what do you do there?
Well, the O'Shea Foundation is actually named after Mr. John R. O'Shea, who formed a foundation in 1940. The history of Mr. O'Shea, for those of you who may not know it, was in 1916, he's driving down Delaware Avenue and strikes a cyclist in a rainstorm. Fortunately, the cyclist was not hurt, but he determined that he was so traumatized that he needed to figure out a way to keep the water off the windshield, and two years later, he patented the windshield wiper, formed a company called Trico, which I think most of us are all familiar with, and was very successful, formed a foundation in 1940, and was very private with his giving until 1998. That it became public, and at the time it had $220 million in the fund. Today I'm the second president. I succeeded Tom Baker and I've been president since 2007. And today we have $275 million, and we've invested a little over $350 million in Western New York, varying whether it be Oshai Children's Hospital, the Albright Knox, whether it be all kinds of very, very focused, very specific focus areas. And we award about 150 grants a year, giving away about $12 to $15 million.
Since you've been in charge of the Oshai Foundation, it's become far higher profile, largely, I think, because of your presence in our community, Robert, and I think that's a tribute to you and as well as what the foundation's doing. But because of that, you must get bombarded. How do you sift through all those requests, all that information that you're being fed? And I know you do more than just give away money. Talk a little bit about what the foundation does.
Well, the answer is there's numerous needs in this community, and that's one of the reasons that they selected me as to succeed Tom was the fact that they wanted the foundation to become more visible in the community and be what we, our tagline is to be a catalyst for change. We certainly are one that we welcome people to come in and talk to us. We listen to people. We try and figure out a way to say yes. And yes, we are bombarded, but that's okay. We're supposed to do that. In many cases, we tweak the request. We are very specific in what we want to try and accomplish with, and we partner with the grantee. And what we have found lately is that they really need more than just a check. So we really have increased what we're calling our philanthropic support. Next week, we're starting a Oshai Fellowship of Leaders of Color, and 24 women and men of color are going to be taking a full week course with the Rockwood Institute down at Beaver Hollow. And it's really to establish and create the next generation of leaders in this community. So that's a wonderful time for transition. The community has certainly generated some significant enthusiasm with what's going on. And we want to be a part of it, and we also collaborate with others. And you know, we have wonderful partners, whether it's the Community Foundation, whether it's the Wilson Foundation, and et cetera. To give you a perfect example, Peter, there's a East Side Initiative where 14 foundations came together to partner with state government to really develop some of the East Side corridors to put some oomph into that community.
We are live this morning. If you'd like to participate in today's show, you can reach us here in the studio at 803-0930 or 1-800-612-6169236 if you're long distance, and star 930 if you're mobile. Those are all free calls. You can even text us at 30930 and we'll try to respond to whatever your question is, whether it's about what Robert Gioia is doing at the foundation or through the Erie Canal Harbor Development Corporation or about real estate more generally. That's right here in the studio, 803-0930. The Wilson Foundation, of course, has been a great, a huge benefit to our community, and in many ways, as you point out, has been a great partner for the Oshai Foundation and other foundations in town. But the Wilson Foundation has a particular focus. What if you were to say what the focus of the Oshai Foundation is? Is it generally philanthropic, or do you have a specific type of capital or operating expenses, or what do you focus on?
Well, we do both. We do capital. We do operating support. We do searches. We do strategic planning. We really sit down with the grantee and try and help them best in a way that they can continue the good work that they are doing for Western New York. You know, we have five primary focus areas. You know, creating stable neighborhoods. Allow people to become economically self-sufficient, arts and culture, healthcare, and just the well-being of the community. And, you know, our mission statement is to improve the quality of life of Western New York. So we really can deviate and really take a wide look at an opportunity when a grantee comes in. And I urge people to go online You can see, how do you apply? Just send us a little letter of intent, or as we refer to it as an LOI, and you know, we'll call back to you, and we'll test with you. We'll see if it makes sense, and we'll negotiate it. And it's a partnership, and that's what we want it to be.
How big a staff do you have there?
We have a total staff of, including myself, 10. When mm-hmm. I started, Peter, there were only myself and three others, a total of four. So we've added six people, and only one person has been in grant making. Everything else has been in support and philanthropic support, communications, and knowledge management. So we have a team that can really help the organizations and really partner with them in order to make we go forward.
We've had Clotilde Dedecker on the show several times, and she's talked about what the Community Foundation is doing, and I know you work very collaboratively with them, as you pointed out earlier. How important is the whole foundation community in Western New York? It seems to me, like since you've been there, and even perhaps a little bit before that, that the whole profile of the foundation community has changed.
Well, that has changed, and so has the influence of what government spending can do and will do within a community. So the importance of collaboration and, as we refer to it, as collective impact with other partners is critical. And, you know, Clotilde and her team, you know, have done wonderful things for this community and really make sure that the money does go to the places where it should go. And sometimes we will take a turn at it. And many times when we get a request in, we're talking to other foundations, and this individual grantee needs a new generator for $100,000. And, you know, we'll do 50 if you do 25 and that. So it's really a partnership, and everybody really understands that we have to do it together, because there are only a certain amount of assets available. Now, you know, fortunately, Buffalo came into a windfall with the Wilson Foundation. It's not often that a community gets, you know, well over $1 billion between Buffalo and Detroit available to it. And then the Mother Cabrini Foundation, which was a spinoff from a healthcare provider down in New York State, which has like $2 or $3 billion. So, and it's what we all have been able to achieve is through shared knowledge and sharing that knowledge amongst each other and partnering.
What you point out is that our community has, I guess, developed a substantial amount of wealth through foundations, but that was wealth that was created a long time ago for the most part, and we're blessed to have that in our history. Many communities have nothing like what we have, and yet we face issues here in Western New York that many other communities don't face, particularly as they relate to our presence in New York State. And you mentioned earlier, for example, the government spending issue that we're all, I guess, confronted with. Our mission on this show for an hour a week is to help people protect and enhance their investment in real estate right here in Western New York, which is not a very narrow focus. It allows us to talk to people like you, which I think greatly enhance the value of our investment here in real estate in Western New York. The question I have, I guess, more generally is kind of where do you think we go with all this in terms of the role of the foundation versus the role of government, and really the fact that still, with all those assets, Buffalo is still a fairly poor community relative to other communities our size around the country?
Well, the answer is a poor. We are one of the, unfortunately, we're at the top of the list of poor cities in the community in the country. I think where we go from here is, first of all, let's understand that there are more foundations that are being developed and created as we're sitting here talking. Mm-hmm. In the last 8 to 10 years, we've had the Cullen Foundation, we have the Lee Foundation, and many others. And there's a numerous foundations available. Business First just came out with the whole foundation report, so I would urge people to look at that. I think where we go, Peter, and I think it's a perfect example, and I'll segue if we want to talk about the waterfront, but it has to be a public-private partnership. You know, we have to, you know, government can't do everything, and philanthropy can't do everything. So what government can do, it can be the spark, And what we have to do is work together and have private philanthropy and private business create and invest in it. A perfect example is Canalside. You know, the state has put in $150 million into infrastructure, and there's probably going to be $400 million of private investment, whether it be Pagula, whether it be Sinatra, and the like. So that's where you can, when you can combine those entities and that horsepower, you can create some real change.
I've had most of the significant developers in our community on this show to have their opinion of this whole thing.
And it's what to do and when to do it and how to do it.
Really the how is really what I try to focus on, because they're going to do what they want to do. But how they do it is really the question. And without exception, they say one thing, and that is that without the support of government through tax credits and other means, projects would not happen here. You cite $150 million investment in the waterfront. Last time you were on, it was only $50 million. Mm-hmm. So there's been another $100 million just in the few years since you've been on, which is way too long, because I want to keep the community updated on what's going on down there. But the fact of life is, I think at that point it was 50 and something like 200 was private at that point. Now we're at 150 and 400. Mm-hmm. So there is an obvious leverage there that's taking place. But are we stuck in a situation where we, in Western New York, where we cannot really attract private investment without the support of government?
I don't think we're in that bad of a situation. I think what happens is when you really, I mean, just think, it was 10 years ago, Memorial Odd was still standing down on the foot of Main Street. So, and you know, there were tumbleweeds passing through the area. So when there's a risk involved, and, you know, we have to give some credit to folks like Terry Pagula and others who have really taken a risk. And when there's risk, now, in Mr. Pagula's case, they took no state money. Mm-hmm. They took no federal public money. You know, there's not many billionaires in this community that can do that. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that it's inappropriate that the state and federal government support.
I'm not suggesting that. I'm just trying to, I'm trying to look at the light at the end of the tunnel here.
Okay.
As our community develops, we're not Houston. We're not Austin. We're not Phoenix. We're not even Las Vegas or places like that.
Well, but I think I agree with you, and I didn't mean to imply that that's what you were saying. I think once you start to see the investment and once you start to see the impact that it has, people will then gladly join in, and it's not necessary to really have that support on a long-term basis. And the more excitement you start to gather, and 1.5 million people going to Canalside on an annual basis, people will start to open up restaurants. Look at all the new restaurants that are opening up in Western New York, and just numerous locations all over the place. You know, Chandler Street. Who would have ever thought 5 years ago that you would want to go down and have dinner on Chandler Street? I mean, two blocks from the old Joya Pasta Factory. So, you know, it's an incredible what people can do. And that, when people take risks, we need to invest in those risk takers, and we commend them for that.
I could not agree more. And what you're saying is exactly right. Once people's action begets action, there's a momentum thing that we all are feeling here in mm-hmm. Western New York, and I want you to comment on that in a minute. One of the very concrete things which we're noticing right now, one of the problems we've had with private investment is there's this glass ceiling on lease income, rents. And because of that, you need subsidies to get a project done, because if you strictly based upon cost and market conditions, projects wouldn't happen, particularly retail, office space, and even apartments. But what's happening now, which is most interesting, is we're seeing, and this is my own unscientific study, we're seeing rents here for residential units becoming really kind of national level rents as opposed to subsidized rents, which we've had for so long. Ben Oblitz's project near the medical campus, which I'm sure very familiar with, the rents on that, you know, it was in paper, front page, showing that the rents are looking pretty much like lots of other cities around the country instead of like a poor city like Buffalo. And I think that's a very good indication. but it has not yet hit retail. It has not yet hit office. And until we get to that level, I think we're going to require the kind of subsidy and public involvement you're talking about.
Well, there's retail and then there's commercial. And, yep. And I think most projects that we see that are developed, the retail side is most difficult to fill on the floor level. It's the residential that certainly are filled at a pretty significant quick rate. And you certainly know better about rates of renting than I do. And I read the paper as well. So I think it's supply and demand. And, with the medical campus, 15 years ago wasn't even half of what it is today. And it continues to attract. And that connection between the medical campus and canal side, and you have a train system that runs up and down Main Street. You see the apartments. Who would have ever thought that you'd have apartments on North Street of that magnitude and of that value? Or 500 Pearl Street that was just open at the, Aloft building. So I think that is a benefit to what happens. But on the other hand, on the other side, we need to make sure that we don't forget those that can't handle those types of rentals and that type of income, don't have the benefit of that. So that's where philanthropy can be of help in really creating and educating these people so they can get onto a real job and then hopefully live in some of those apartments.
And I want to get your opinions on workforce development if we come back from the break, because a lot of that is integral to what you're saying. People need to get started. They need
exactly.
They need to get going. We'll be right back with more from our house cheers after these very important messages. Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. I say all-new every week because it is. We keep modifying and improving that site to make it easier and better for your experience, including providing a complete inventory of homes available here in Buffalo, Niagara, and all across upstate, and through our links to Phoenix and also to Boston, Massachusetts. And you'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before and live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. And we have a wonderful housing stock here in Western New York and magnificent architecture, but a lot of these buildings were built a long time ago, and they need to be improved. And oftentimes when you buy one of these lovely structures, you go in there with stars in your eyes, and sometimes you walk away with a black eye. So the bottom line is you want to make sure that you know what you're in for. This program allows you to do that. And also ask about our pre-purchase commitment and even our warm home loan, only available through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. And if you have a general inquiry about anything relative to real estate, call one place and only one place. That's the Hunt Customer Service Center, 633-9400. We'll either answer your call right there and give you a response we can over the phone, or we'll direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is you may need, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have. Remember, our guarantee stands. We will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA professionals. Stop into one of our many open houses this weekend and ask about details of that particular program or any other program we offer. We have a very special show ongoing right now with the president of the John R. O'Shea Foundation and the chairman of the Erie Canal Harbor Development Corporation. That, of course, is Robert Gioia, one of our leading citizens here in Western New York. We've been having kind of a wide-ranging topic discussion on various things that are relative to the present and future of our community, some of it led by our foundation community and others, parts of it led by the private sector and then in combination with our governmental entities. And we were just about to get into, I think, a kind of the topic of the day here for us in Western New York. And before I ask you to respond to that, one of the great things about Western New York, which I don't think our listeners or even us who have been here all our lives recognize, is that unlike most of the very, very, very prominent great cities in this country, if you work someplace, you can actually live pretty close to it here in Buffalo. If you work in Aspen, Colorado, you can't live in Aspen. You're living about a mile and a half away. If you work in San Francisco, many cases you can't live anywhere near where you work. And this is a real problem. Here in Buffalo, you can live around the corner, and you can live affordably around the corner in most cases. Look what's happening downtown, which you know only too well. All the people that are going to be going, for example, to M&T will have an opportunity to live right nearby, which is an amazing, amazing thing. And that's just one thing, and I know you're sensitive to that, but I want our listeners to know that we have a great advantage here in Western New York.
Well, we clearly do, and we have a great transportation system, roadways. I mean, you can get to, I live right in the city in the Delaware Park District, and coming out here to Amherst took 12 minutes. So it really, it was Saturday, but still, nonetheless, it is easy to get around. And I think if you want that luxury to live near your work, you may have to pay a little bit of a premium for that. So that's understandable. What we have to figure out is, and I know we started to talk about it just before we went to break, was that there's a part of the population here in this community that has been underserved. Mm-hmm. And we need to help that part of the community to give them the opportunity, if they're willing to make the effort, to become a contributing factor to the growth of Western New York. And that is not easy, that these people have not been given an opportunity. And I know with new initiatives, the Northland Workforce Development, Buffalo Center for Arts and Technology, and creating a workforce training for those in the medical field. And then you look at what M&T is doing with the talent attraction with, the tech people. That is, not only are we have to attract them, but we also have to train them. And I think most people will tell you that there are plenty of jobs available, but there isn't a skilled workforce to perform those functions that are so needed desperately in our community.
You and I both know how recently we were having discussions about the lack of linkage between our college and university community and all those needs that you just described. Last week I had Mike Brogan on, from the academic dean from Damon, and I asked him that specific question, and he went into elaborate detail about what they're doing. But 10, 15, 20 years ago, when I was involved there as chairman of the board, there wasn't that linkage.
Correct.
And we were responding to what we saw as kind of the next opportunity employment-wise, physical therapy, physician's assistant, that kind of thing. But we really weren't out there talking to those people in the community that were saying, we need these people. How is that organized now? How is that linkage in your mind as president of the foundation? Is it better today, and is it really active?
Well, the linkage is what's really critical is that we, as those that are going to try and support these initiatives, need to understand what the community really needs. I'm speaking at commencement at Trocare in about 5 weeks, in the middle of December. 200 young men and women are graduating in the healthcare field. 96% of them will be working within 6 months after they get certification. So it's those types of entities that we want to continue to support, and these people were not working. They were unemployed, underserved, and underprivileged. So it's when we invest in those people, and you see the energy that they have and how they want to become productive citizens in this community. Most people don't want to live, on a street corner. They want to contribute, and they want to be able to benefit from those factors if they participate in this community. So I think it's coordinating. Coordinating what is the demand. I think Northland is trying to do that with some of their skilled workforce and other entities, whether it be BCAT and other workforce organizations.
The problem with Northland, it can only take so many people.
Correct.
And this is why, like you say, 200 graduates from Trocare, there's 400 from this school, that school, 500, 1,000 from the university graduating, whatever it might be. This is what I think is the real dynamic that we have to harness, because so often the knock here, for example, on the university was that we were bringing people in from all over the world, and then they would turn around and leave, and we weren't really providing the clear path from graduation or from the degree to a job here.
there are so many different opportunities for these types of programs for people to take advantage of. Last night, Sally and I went to Assembly House 150, Dennis Marr's initiative on Edwards Street that trains young men and women in the craft of woodworking. And it just was fascinating to see what these people have been able to do. And we have so many talented, excited professionals that want to train people, whether it be Stephen Tucker, whether it be Gina Burkhart, whether it be Dennis Marr, whether it be Dennis Walzak, whether it be, you know, the folks at Goodwill. So we have to continue to invest in. That's, I think, one of the primary focus areas that in the years to come where foundations and philanthropy can be helpful, partnering with federal programs, whether it be Workforce Investment Board, whether it be state money or federal money, that's where the partnership can really bring these people up and make a contribution and feel good about themselves.
One of the knocks on our community from a long time ago was that there were so many of these things going on that were uncoordinated that it was almost too complex for someone to try to enter into that system. You mentioned in your last response there that the foundations are need to get involved in this. How are you involved in that now? How do you help coordinate that, for example, with the United Way?
Well, we all sit around the table and we talk about what are the best initiatives, what is out there, what are people doing, whether it be, you know, the Northland, whether it be other workforce development organizations. And we challenge them. And we challenge them to develop what are the outcomes you're looking for. For example, Buffalo Center for Arts and Technology, two measurements. How many kids graduate from high school and how many people are employed? And measure us by those standards. Measure us by that number alone and whether or not we are doing and having success with our programs. And we should continue to support success. We also have to recognize that, you know, this is a long-term plan. This takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort to really affect change in this community. Like I stated with Memorial Law, it was 10 years ago. You know, so, and you see the difference today. This even more so when you're dealing with a workforce and you're dealing with a population that has been so underserved. A lot of single parents, and I'm told that many of the graduates that I'll be speaking with in mid-December at Trocare are single-family parents.
And many times the first of their family that have ever gone to college.
No question.
Which is huge. We have a caller online, Robert. This is John from Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter.
Hey, John.
Hey, Robert. I just wanted to make a couple comments, Robert, on you had mentioned the poverty level in Buffalo is very, very high. It is here in Rochester and Syracuse. But keep in mind that in New York State, I think we have the wealthiest poor in the world. There's a lot of benefits, the Medicaid, education, subsidized rents, healthcare, meals, et cetera, that aren't reflected in the statistics. So I think the poor in the this region are better off than they were, in past years.
I would hope so.
I say that from experience growing up in the Buffalo area. We live in the low-income projects for the first few years that I can remember. And I just wanted to make that comment. The other comment I wanted to make, Peter addressed it, the tax credits. Tax credits, I think, are good for the economy. I think we need to cut back on the energy tax credits and real estate tax credits, because you look at the deficits in the federal government right now and the state government included, maybe it's time to move on and tackle the real problems of the public employee unions, which is the 800-pound gorilla in the room that have devastated New York State.
Well, that would be about another 3 hours of discussion here. But
well, the good news is
I'm going to ask you to come back and talk about that after the break. We do have to
sure.
go to break.
Okay.
And we'll be right back with more with Robert Gioia right after these very important messages. Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Hunt Mortgage is the home of the pre-purchase commitment and the low-rate and closing cost guarantee, as well as the Second Look program. Let me just comment on that for just a second here. Let's say you're out looking for a house, and somebody recommended that you be qualified by this lender or that lender. Let us take a look at it. We call it the Second Look program. It's absolutely free. We'll take a look at it. If we can't beat it, we'll give you a gift card for $50. You've got nothing in the world to lose and everything in the world to gain. And if we can't beat it, you'll know that you're getting the best deal in town. And we'll make sure that that's the case only through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. I'm in the studio today with Robert Joya. Mr. Joya is the president of the John R. O'Shea Foundation and the chairman of the Erie Canal Harbor Development Corporation. These are two very important institutions for Western New York. And before the break, we had a caller from Rochester, John, who's a regular listener, and we appreciate him listening from Rochester. His comment was that maybe we should, I'm going to paraphrase badly, maybe we should kind of stop all this government subsidy stuff and just let the market take over here, and because, you know, we're doing pretty well. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that I don't necessarily disagree with what his analysis was. However, these people do need a break, and I think it's not an endless break. They need to respond, and they need to make good on what we've invested in them. And it's like anything we invest in. In many cases, we're investing in people as opposed to investing in bricks and mortar or whatever the case may be. So I think that, yes, the economy is doing extremely well, and yes, it's bringing some of those people, but there are still plenty that do need the help, and we need to help them, especially the next generation. And it's really about educating them and getting them to graduate from high school and explaining to them that, you know what, there are numerous opportunities if you get a good high school degree and graduate and go on to you can go on to a career, a trade school. You can go on to higher education, whatever the case may be. But understand what your talents are and how best can you do that. And we need to help them do that.
An organization like Say Yes are digging back into that population,
yes,
way back into preschool,
right,
to help people understand that if they just finish that high school degree you're mm-hmm. talking about, that there are good things in their future, and no matter what the handicaps are. And we've had Kreiner Cash on to talk about how we've opened up our schools, for example, that were shut down at 3 o'clock or whenever. There now we've got the community school thing going on, and there's a lot of really good things. And you mentioned this kind of 10-year window, and you know better than I do how much has happened in that 10-year window. It's been shocking, really.
Well, remember how many people remember all the hype about Bass Pro coming
right
down to the waterfront. So, I would hope. What this community has begun to learn is take it in small steps. And it was Mark Goldman's brother that taught us all on the waterfront, lighter, quicker, cheaper. And mm-hmm. take it in small steps, build on success, and then that will continue to enjoy the popularity, and people will want to invest in it. And that's the same with education. And when you talk about Say Yes, I mean, the work that they do, it is really helping the social needs and challenges of these young children and adults to really get through the rigors of a day of school. And, you know, some of these kids have to take 5 buses to get to school. I mean, it's something that I've never experienced. I've witnessed much of it today. And you know what? We need to help them. We owe them a helping hand. And I will tell you, in most cases, when you do that, you will get paid dividends in significant numbers.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, you just see the advantages that some people have had and others that those advantages are so foreign that they wouldn't even know them if they hit them in the face. And we really have, you know, all of America really is a story of two societies. And unfortunately, many of us live in one society without any knowledge of the other, and it doesn't matter which one you're in. And this, hopefully, things like Say Yes allow those two to merge in some way, shape, or form. What's happening at in all the organizations you touch on, Northland, all the way down to the individual college and universities.
We create enormous wealth in this community, and it's continuing to even accelerate. And it's that enormous wealth that then they, many of these people, whether it be Patrick Lee, whether it be Jack Cullen, whether it be John Oshai, we can, the list goes on and on and on, that then do want to give back and reinvest in the community that has been so generous to them. And that's, if anything, people would take away from our conversation today is, you know what, give back to your community. Your community is giving to you, invest in it and give back and get involved.
And almost in any way, and there's so many ways,
which
are shocking. We have a couple callers, so let's take one more call if we can. This is Janine from Buffalo. Janine, how can we help you?
Yes, hi. I have a question. I am a convicted felon of DWI. I've been released for a year and a half, and I've really tried hard to get some education and work and be a productive part of society, and it is extremely difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I did get help from Access VR, and I went to a technical program for a couple of months, but didn't really work out to be much of anything as far as training goes. And just wondering if there's any resources available.
I'm going to try a shot on that, like you too, Robert. I'd encourage you to call the United Way. The United Way has a remarkable system of access to various resources for just the kind of situation you described, Janine. I'd encourage you to call them today. Robert, any thoughts you'd...
I would encourage you to not only do that, but call the Oshai Foundation and ask for me. And what we'll do is we'll connect you with other opportunities that are out there that people will try and help you start another career. You know, I mean, we all make mistakes.
Right.
And, you know, we should be able to let you recover from that if, in fact, you're willing to do so. And it certainly sounds like you've tried to do that. So I would say there are organizations that can direct you and assist you, and they're ready, willing, and able to do that.
I couldn't agree more. And I think Janine isolates a problem that we have in society here and everywhere, really, and that it's just where do I begin?
Correct.
And a lot of people just don't know where to begin.
Exactly. We need the roadmap.
And even when they begin, sometimes they go down the wrong road. But it's never, in my mind, it's never too late.
No.
And I think Janine has hopefully a bright future in front of her. We've got about 6 minutes left. Let's take one more call. This is Stuart from Williamsville. Stuart, how can we help you?
Yes, Robert. How do we ascertain whether the dollars your gift to grantees are effectively being utilized? You create a metric to benchmark against your expectations to measure ROI, or, you know, sort of all business plans make money on paper. Moving the aspiration to implementation represents a sort of a heavy lift. How do you dig down and get granular to make sure those dollars are effectively being spent?
Well, it's never perfect, Stuart. It's, as you know, what we do is we sit with the grantee. We understand what the needs of the grantee are and why, and who and what is the population that they're affecting, whether it be Goodwill, whether it be, you know, any organization that's out there, whether, you know, the city mission, for example. And it's very similar to making an investment if you want to put invest in a stock of a company. You know, our return is social return, which will help not only the individual but also the community, because the more people that we invest in and we can raise them up to a career, the less government has to support them. And, you know, we'll never be done with it. We'll never accomplish it all. But I think there are benchmarks. There are, you know, there are ways to value, and we keep an eye on, and we communicate with our grantees. Many of our grants are multi-year, and while after the first year, we evaluate how you're doing. And, you know, we sometimes have to change it. But as I said earlier in the show, we have to find a way to say yes to these folks and help them, because that's, you know what, this is not my money. It's Mr. Oshai's good wishes, and he wants it invested in Buffalo, New York.
I want to go back to one thing you said earlier in the show, which is, I think, may have been lost on some of our listeners, particularly if you tuned in late, and that is that this foundation started with $220 million. it's given away $350 million, and now it's got $270 million.
Right.
There's another element to what you do, which is to invest the principal of the foundation itself. How do you make those kind of decisions?
Well, that's a constant decision between my board and my staff, my team, that, you know, we do want to be in perpetuity. We invest the money into vehicles that return a certain amount, and we are very careful on what we spend. And that's why we only spend 5-6% a year. We're required to spend 5% in order to take the advantage of the tax benefit we have. There are some that are spend down. Ralph Wilson Foundation is a spend down, and they're going to be done in 20 years. But, if you make 10%, you give away 5%, you know, you certainly can do it. Now, there are years that we've given away more than that. When we invest in the medical school, the Jacobs Medical School, the $5 million or the $10 million for Oshai Children's Hospital. So there are times that you spend a little bit more. And what you do, Peter, is you measure it over 5 years. We take 20 rolling quarters to take the highs and the lows out of the market and just stay within our boundaries. And it is a discipline and it's a constant struggle between board and management, because, you know, we know the need, and, you know, and but they also are very responsible for the role that they play in making sure that we are here 20 years from now.
And being involved with a couple foundations myself, I know what you're talking about, and it's a constant kind of juggling act and balancing act. But, and of course, then you have times like now, when the market seems to be doing nothing but helping organizations
right.
like yours, which
Correct.
We're blessed to have, and who knows how long that'll last. One more caller, quick. This is John from Buffalo. John, how can we help you? Quickly.
Hey, guys. You were talking about the two different worlds. I've kind of existed in both, and I'm going to tell you something. Everywhere I go in this town, there's some small business person or manager running around like a nut because some poor person didn't show up for their shift.
Mm-hmm.
I hear that kind of talk from every restaurant owner, you know, all the basic employers.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that all of this handout stuff makes poor people not want to work.
Well, I'm going to interrupt you there, because I think we're making assumptions about people's motivation. I think a lot of it is cultural. I think a lot of people have grown up in a situation where being on time and you know, that kind of stuff just was not a value. And it takes time, I think, for many people to learn this.
The money, they're not going to change. You know.
Well, I guess, John. I mean, we can make generalizations like that. I'm not so sure I'd agree with you. But go ahead, Robert.
I would just say to you that I think that this is not perfect. This is not a perfect science. But I would say to you, the majority of the people that you help will give you returns, and that you'll be very. That this community will be very beneficial for, and those that don't take advantage of it, well, then that's the nature of, you know, the way it is. And
it's not just poor people that don't show up, I might add.
Exactly. So it's a balance, and I think you invest in things that you get a return on, and that's why you have to keep in touch with them.
Yeah, and I think to make a generalization about someone's economic background and their propensity to be there or not there is not exactly accurate in many cases, because I know
yeah.
the other side
and
of that.
And the immigrant population we have now is significant, and they're a great workforce.
Robert Gioia, president of John R. Shai Foundation and also the chairman of the Erie Canal Harbor Development Corporation. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Great to be here, Peter. Thank you.
I'd like to thank our listeners. This is Peter Hunt. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.